The one thing I've learnt from these 25 years of being involved in campaigns in Britain, all over Europe, in America, the one thing I do know is this, that democracy, liberty, and freedom don't come for nothing. But unless you're prepared to fight and battle for those things constantly, that as soon as you stop peddling, the other side, the establishment, will hit back and try to take those things away. Ladies and gentlemen, we should be enormously proud, all of us, in the last couple of years, that we have managed to change the course of history. But what we now have to do is to make sure that change of direction, that change of history, is not just a short-term phenomenon. We've got to keep fighting and keep working to make sure that our victory is permanent. That's what we've got to do. Thank you. Thank you.
Why do I do it? Why do I put myself through it? Because I enjoy it, I guess. That was great. I mean, they've had a very long day in there. A very long day in there. So I hope I set them off in a reasonable mood. I think I may have got it. Yeah, it was okay.
Well, that was me talking at the Conservative Political Action Conference, also known as CPAC. It's a massive annual event held just outside Washington, D.C. It is the largest gathering of conservative activists across America and indeed across the world. The reason why I've chosen to take you behind the scenes here is because it's an event that is getting more and more attention every year, mainly because one Donald J. Trump keeps on coming back. So who's behind this movement? What is their agenda? Why not speak to the guy behind CPAC, the chair of the American Conservative Union, Matt Schlapp? I caught up with him backstage at CPAC.
So basically, the AECU is all about knitting together a coalition, which is a strange thing in America because we think of the left-leaning party and the right-leaning party. But really, as we all know, politics comes down to putting that coalition together. So the people who established the ACU 50 years ago said, look, we've got to stop fighting as conservatives. If the conservatives don't stand together, even with some of our differences, we'll never beat the left. So the ACU was the first step to try to do that. And then they said, why don't we all meet once a year? And our kids are getting killed on the college campuses and everything else. Why don't we bring in all the students? And this CPAC idea wasn't my idea because it happened in the 1970s, but you can just see it blossoming. These kids want to be part of something different than the Obama idea of government. They don't want socialism. It doesn't work for them.
Matt Schlapp was given the honor of introducing the president while I was there.
And so, on behalf of the thousands of students who are here, and on behalf of the thousands of activists who are here, it is my historic privilege to give you the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
I'm thrilled to be back at CPAC with so many of my wonderful friends and amazing supporters and proud conservatives. By the way, you don't mind if I go off script a little bit, because, you know, it's sort of boring. It's a little boring. Historically, if you win the presidency, you don't do well 2 years later. And you know what? We can't let that happen. If you only had a choice of one, what would you rather have, the Second Amendment or the tax cuts? Go ahead. Second Amendment, tax cuts. Second Amendment. I'm going to leave it at the Second Amendment. I don't want to get into that battle, all right? We're going to say you want, Matt, we're going to say you want the Second Amendment the most. But we're going to get them all. But we have a very crooked media. We had a crooked candidate, too, by the way. But we have a very, very crooked media. I try like hell to hide that bald spot, folks. I work harder. Don't worry, you're getting the wall. Don't worry, okay? I heard something.
This was an important moment for Trump. As the midterms approach, it's all to play for. As we caught up with Matt, I thought it was worth exploring the personal relationship he shares with the president and what is the Donald like as a man.
You know Donald Trump quite well, and I've met him a few times, as you know. But I was watching him yesterday on the stage. I saw a side of Trump I hadn't seen before. I saw jokes, I saw a self-deprecating comment about his own hair. The one question everyone wants to know is, what is Donald Trump like as a man? And I think you're in quite a good position to answer that.
Well, what's interesting about that, Nigel, is I did meet with Trump a bit before I ever thought he was going to run for president. In America, Donald Trump was always mentioned because he's this outsized figure who would jump in and make kind of political commentary. But I don't think anybody ever really thought he'd do it. And I remember one time he said to me, why don't people take me seriously? I might really do this. And I was like, well, they don't think you're ever going to give public disclosure on your finances. And he goes, why wouldn't I do that? I'm worth $9 billion. It's $9 billion, man. I'm worth $9 billion. I was like, sir, put it on the papers. And when you file those papers, they're going to think you're serious as a heart attack. And he talked to his lawyers. He said, we got to get these papers filed because I want to do this. So what he is the thing that I think is the most unique about him. And the American experience, politicians do not like the give and take in America. What they like is to be able to give a speech written by their aides that is poll tested and measured, and that's what we do here. And the base of the Republican Party and the conservatives here, they don't like it anymore. They don't like the fact that there's no fight in it. They don't like that it's so careful. They see Obama comes in, he does everything on the agenda that they want. He's bold. He doesn't trim his sails on everything. Republicans come in and like, well, we have to be careful because we might get attacked. Donald Trump just said, basically, screw that. We're going to fight on everything. I'm going to fight like a tiger. And what he does every time I met with him, he asked me 10 times as many questions as I asked him. He wouldn't let me ask questions. He wanted to just suck the knowledge out of anybody he talked to. So you know what? Now that he's president, he's been talking to these people for a decade about these issues, and he's been asking them questions. He knows what they think.
And now he looks really, I have to say, happy within his own skin.
Yeah.
You know, I saw someone yesterday with tremendous self-confidence, but, and it's a big but, midterm elections coming up November this year. They're a big deal. At stake, of course, houses, a lot in the Senate, but even more houses, seats in the lower house. I mean, realistically, tradition says that the incumbent does badly in the midterms. You know, Obama did terribly in his midterms. What are the prospects for the Republicans coming up this year?
Look, President Obama did terribly in his first midterm elections. Bill Clinton did terrible in his first midterm elections. But the dynamic they had against them was they had a big surge in their numbers in the election in which they were elected president. There's a little virtue here to how Trump became the president, is that he didn't have a swell of victories in Congress. It stayed about the same. So it wasn't like he picked up a lot of seats kind of on the cheap. And so those seats won't get lost easily either. I think we will lose seats. But this surge and decline is just not in play in this election. It's one thing that doesn't get covered. And you know why it doesn't get covered? Because it's an argument that accrues to Donald Trump's benefit. What the press is trying to do in America is try to set this narrative that it's going to be such a destructive election for Republicans. They're just trying to demoralize people. When for the people who came to CPAC and heard all the wonderful speakers and saw the energy, their plan is not working. We are not demoralized.
No, I kind of get that. There's a very upbeat match lap here from CPAC and the ACU talking up the prospects of the party. But hey, maybe, looking at the opinion polls and the ratings over the last couple of weeks, with some justification. As a conference, a lot of party political conferences that I've been at and spoken to around the world are, how can I put it, stuffy. This is more like a rock concert you put on here.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And you talk about the enthusiasm and the excitement. And what's cool about that is these kids loved hearing from you, and they love hearing from you every time you come. And there are these great speeches, but it's the content in the speeches. And it's the fact that if you look at what's going on when you come to CPAC left and right, you'll see all these panels on really serious issues, substantive, sober conversations.
Yeah.
And you know what's great? All the butts are in the seats. They want that. The American voter believes that their country is literally at stake right now, and they want to learn more so they can be better activists. And they feel a great kinship with what great people like you are doing in allied countries like the UK.
CPAC this year, big success.
It's a big success, and you can just tell by all the people who came and showed up. We had record crowds and the media coverage, and of course, having the president, the vice president, half the president's cabinet, all these important conservative leaders, home run.
This phenomenon, bringing together conservatives, a lot of young people, it's happening here in America. Is this something that can spread to other parts of the world, in your view?
Yeah, so one of the great announcements we made at CPAC this year was there was this great group, the Japanese Conservative Union, that was established, interestingly enough, in it started in 2011, the first year Donald Trump came to CPAC. They have now decided to take the JCU, which is, you know, a brother organization of the ACU, and we had our first CPAC in Tokyo, Japan. Our first international CPAC was in Tokyo in December, and it was a marvel to behold. All these people, we had defectors from North Korea, we had people from Nepal and the Philippines and South Korea. I mean, think about if you're over there in Japan, China, the menace of China, the menace of North Korea. I mean, they got real issues. And so they've just announced that they're also going to have an Asia Pacific Conservative Union. Nigel, it sounds like this is something that should be going to other parts of the globe as well.
Well, given that you've done it and made it work, my last question for you is, when is CPAC coming to London and Europe?
I think it's a great question, which I got to get an answer to fast, don't you think?
Well, I tell you what, you organize it and you will get a crowd even bigger.
Is that right?
I think you would get a crowd even bigger than you've got here in Washington. And the reason is, you talked earlier about the way the Republican Party have done business, that it's all very safe. It's all very careful. You want to see it our side of the water. It's even more politically correct. It's even more safe. So I think there's a big gap in the market for CPAC. And so, Matt, I'm going to hold you to your word, and I expect CPAC to be in London. You've got 18 months to deliver.
I don't know. I'm going to rest over the next couple of weeks, and then I'm going to get back to you because I think this is a smashing idea.
Well, that was Matt Schlapp, and me being very cruel, but thank you very much indeed. It's been a great CPAC. Backstage at CPAC. I was here earlier because I was very lucky, actually, that the president's entourage asked me into the private green room, and so I was one of the. I think I was the first person to talk to him when he came off stage, which was good. His speech was an hour and 25 minutes. Mine is not going to be quite as long as that because it's the end of quite a long day. It is just the most amazing conference, this. I mean, the buzz, the atmosphere, the energy. And also, what I'm noticing is the age. There's a lot of young people here. So I kind of feel that Trump's had a really good couple of months. He's up in the polls. It's going pretty well. My job today, really, is to say to them, don't give up, keep fighting. Because if you're complacent and you think it's all over and the game is won, that's when everything goes wrong in life.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, it's Mr. Brexit, Nigel Farage!
But it just goes to show that sometimes the good things in life have to be fought for. The good things in life take time to come to fruition. That the good things in life, in the face of the opposition of the establishment, are hard to achieve. But it all makes you realise, doesn't it, that in 2016, with the Brexit vote and the election of Donald Trump, we stuffed the establishment. We did.
Please subscribe to Farage Against the Machine. Thanks for listening.